from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Latest polls, no surprise, America looking its most politically polarized in 25 years. Wow. Meghan McCain and Michael Ian Black climbed into an RV to make it personal, to see if they could work it out. She's a mavericky Republican like her dad, John McCain. He's a comedian and Democrat. Liberal? Yes, sir. This hour, On Point, on the road across America with Meghan McCain and Michael Ian Black, searching for common ground. You can join the conversation. Do our divisions have to be so stark? Is that really just the way it is? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Meghan McCain grew up political, daughter of 08 Republican presidential contender, Arizona Senator John McCain, a maverick like her dad. She's a columnist for The Daily Beast and a commentator on MSNBC, author of My Dad, John McCain, and Dirty Sexy Politics. She blogs at McCainBloguette.com. Michael Ian Black is a comedian, actor, writer, director, was in the films Wet Hot American Summer and Take Me Home Tonight. He starred on TV in Backwash, Stella, Ed, The State. Their new book together tracks a road trip across the country. It is titled, and hang on to your hat here, Josephine, America, You Sexy Bitch, A Love Letter to Freedom. Meghan McCain and Michael Ian Black join us from New York. Meghan, Michael, hi. Welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Meghan, what's up with the title? Where's the love in bitch?
I know it's a little irreverent, off-color title that Michael and I never thought would actually... And first of all, thank you for having us on.
You're very
today.
Welcome.
We're very excited. But we know it's an irreverent, over-the-top, sort of tongue-in-cheek title. And quite frankly, we never thought the publisher would keep it. And we both think it's funny. And this book is for people that aren't necessarily interested in politics all the time and maybe feel disenchanted from the political process. And we specifically wanted this book to be for people that feel like the Beltway is intimidating and ominous. And we thought a fun, sort of ridiculous title would help with that.
Okay. So, but first, what's the sexy part? What are you looking at here? Is it the freedom part? Is it the love the country part? Is that how we express that?
Tom, if we have to explain why America is sexy to you, you just don't get it, man.
Okay. Okay. I love her too.
There's a very specific story, which I can tell you if you're interested on
sure.
how we came up with the
okay,
title.
Okay, let's have it.
Toward the end of the trip, Michael and I were touring the Capitol in D.C., and we were looking at the statue of Lady Freedom in Capitol Hall. And the staffer said, if you noticed her, it's this gorgeous, if anyone's ever seen it, it's this huge, gorgeous statue.
Yes, it is.
And beautiful. I mean, just, mm-hmm. I mean, it will take your breath away.
And not covered up like the Department of Justice lobby statue was.
And she is not covered up, not covered up. And he told us, Jack, this intern, he told us, if you notice, she is facing east because the sun never sets on freedom. And I said, God, you gotta love America. It's one sexy bitch. And the reference was because we were literally looking at a statue of a woman. And we all started laughing, and literally that moment, I was like, that's the title of our book.
And so we've got a title. Michael Ian Black, Democrat,
yes.
liberal, what were you doing in the back of an RV with Meghan McCain? Married man.
I asked myself that probably every day for the duration of the trip. We had a great time. It was a project born of Ambien and Twitter.
Like most of life these days, what do you mean?
Right? Look, if it's not born out of prescription pharmaceuticals, I don't know what the point is anymore. I was up late one night. I took an Ambien and saw that Meghan was on Twitter. And, you know, when you take an Ambien, sometimes your defenses go down. And I wrote to her and I said, hey, we should write a book together. And we didn't know each other. We had met very briefly over satellite when I was doing a television pilot and she was a guest on it.
Yeah.
And she said, sure. Because she, I guess, is as crazy and ready for a challenge as I am.
So was this really red state and blue state in the back of one RV? I mean, you once called Meghan McCain, Michael, you called her your favorite Republican. I guess that's not because she was the most like Ann Coulter or Rush Limbaugh. You're a liberal.
No, it's because I found her a refreshing voice speaking against Republican orthodoxy, which isn't to say that I think Republicans are wrong about everything, but I liked Meghan and continue to like Meghan because she doesn't always toe the party line. And I appreciate that. I appreciate voices that are willing to go out on a ledge.
So Meghan, what were you in that RV? Were you Republican or were you the Rhino, Republican in name only? Or does it depend who you ask?
I think I was pretty conservative on the road. I mean, unless you're really talking about gay marriage or, at this point, legalizing marijuana, I'm pretty conservative. It's just the social issues. I've gotten this stigma of being sort of not conservative enough because I think that gay people shouldn't be considered second-class citizens in America, and all of a sudden that makes me apparently not a good enough Republican in a very small minority group, a small minority of people's eyes. Very small.
Well, or the entire Republican Party.
One or the other. Right. Box A or box B. Check as you will.
True.
So, all right. The National Review Online, they're conservative. They say you guys went after a sort of literary Camp David Accord. What did you set out to do here?
Is this that terrible review we got from the National Review?
Yeah,
yes,
it's not sexy. It's not bitchy. It has very little to say about freedom. Betsy Woodruff didn't like it.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about it is it was written by someone who's like my age. And I always say to people that have such negative things to say about doing something different and creative, I dare you to create something in the world, try something different, and then put it out publicly to let everyone judge. And this isn't a book for people that write for the National Review. This is a book for people who don't like politics already. I mean, give me a break here. I don't want to talk about that review, Tom. Next
okay.
subject.
We got it. We've got it already. I guess the question is, you know, what was it you were setting out to do here? We all know in our guts. I mean, there's a funny side to this. Comedians all over the place have fun with it. There's a really serious side to this as well, because we've got plenty of problems in this country, and people know that, and they feel the division, and it makes everybody uneasy. Michael, were you looking for kumbaya land here? What was the goal?
No, not at all. I don't think it was about kumbaya land, and I think it was about trying to change the tone of the conversation from the sort of uber-serious, in-your-face, pointing fingers and screaming at each other to hanging out and getting drunk and talking about serious mm-hmm. topics in a funny way, or at least in a friendly way. And it was about finding common ground. And it's easy to find common ground in a very, very small, stinky RV because you're sharing it all the time.
Okay, mm-hmm. so let's try to define our politics here. I mean, Megan, you're right. Yes, Michael is a liberal, pacifist, socialist, elitist, snob comedian. we'll come to Michael. But what are your politics? What makes you a conservative? Yeah, we see your tongue in your cheek there, but not mm-hmm. entirely. What are your politics? How do you define them? What makes you conservative?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, what doesn't make me conservative other than literally gay marriage and social issues? I mean, I believe in a strong national defense, fiscal conservatism. I am a proud, proud pro-life woman, although I am not for abstinence-only education. On a very, very basic level, I believe in smaller government, and I adhere to Republican Party doctrines on how I want my government and my country run. And I would never be a Democrat. If anything, my leanings are more slightly libertarian than Democratic. And I feel like people that don't necessarily know each party line or are educated on what it really means to be a Republican mm-hmm. want to call me a Democrat. And mm-hmm. I always say it's much more – I definitely lean much more libertarian than I do Democratic.
Okay. So kind of a social, cultural moderate but a small government conservative. Michael Ian Black, what makes you – what are you? What makes you a liberal, a Democrat? Why?
I am hesitant to call myself a Democrat, as I think a lot of people are hesitant to identify themselves with political parties because I think the political parties tend to mean something other than what I think they're intended to mean. That being said, I will say I have liberal tendencies, but those are based in something pretty fundamental for me, which is this. I believe in sort of foundational documents, and the foundational document I'm specifically referring to right now is the Declaration of Independence,
yeah.
And I believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That being said, I do think those three things, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, are inherently contradictory and have tensions built into them. So I think when you say somebody's liberal or conservative, it tends to mean which side of those three foundational elements do you sort of favor over the other. So liberty, if you favor liberty more over life, you might be a little bit more conservative. If you favor the pursuit of happiness over the other two, you might be a little bit more liberal or libertarian. My belief is that the government needs to help and is there to help.
And you call yourself a comedian?
Wasn't that hilarious, Tom? Did you?
No, it's very scholarly, and I get it. You talk about the tension in those three. What about the tension in the country? There's this new poll out, Megan, says, this is from the Pew Center, serious. country more divided than at any point in the last 25 years, along a whole spectrum of issues. And think about the 25 years. That is saying something. Did you find that as you know, here you are sort of from San Diego all the way across the country. You're in Arizona and you're in Texas and you're up in Nashville and Little Rock and right on across. Did you find that tension in people, in conversations, in people? I don't know. Is everybody at sword points out there?
I mean, surprisingly, and I think it's because Michael and I approached people in a non-combative way. People didn't always know who we were when we spoke with them, and we were just curious to know how they felt about America right at that very moment. We actually found that people really want to come together and want America, I believe America is still great, but want America to continue to be great, and that the polarization in Washington is not only killing politics, but misrepresenting a lot of gray in America. And more importantly to me, a Zogby poll just came out. And Zogby, if people, I'm sure NPR listeners know who that is, but he's a famous pollster who, if you don't know who he is, he called the 2000 election as a draw. Very famous, very well-respected pollster. Recently came out a few days ago and said the interest in this election cycle by 20-somethings is at a historic low, and voter registration is also at a historic low. So that is what scares me more than anything, is that we have this whole new crop of young people that should be interested in what's going on in America for all of the reasons that we wrote about in this book and all the reasons that make living in America scary right now, and they just aren't.
We got a
I think the polarization of politics is the direct reason.
Is it a civil war out there that you found, Michael, or is something more manageable?
It was a more manageable, low-level conflict civil war. It was, the kind of civil war where you go and you yell at each other, and then at the end you get drunk on Bud Light.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about red and blue America with Republican Meghan McCain, Democrat comedian Michael Ian Black. They've driven cross-country looking for common ground, and we are asking what they've found. They're out with a book about it, subtitle, A Love Letter to Freedom, title, America, You Sexy Bitch. See if we can roll with that. I don't know. It's not my style. It's theirs. They're joining us from New York today, and they've been really paying attention in a month across the country, what's going on out there. Meghan McCain, of course, kind of a lifetime in politics, growing up with Dad, campaigning for Senator John McCain in 08. Here he was in St. Paul, Minnesota, accepting the Republican presidential nomination over a crowd of cheering supporters and calling for more bipartisanship.
The constant partisan rancor that stops us from solving these problems isn't a cause, it's a symptom. It's what happens when people go to Washington to work for themselves and not for you.
Senator John McCain running for president of the United States against Barack Obama, who won. He came in also talking, we're not red state, we're not blue state, but it's been tough. On Friday in a press conference, President Obama pointed to 27 consecutive months of job growth, saying the private sector is doing fine, got a lot of flack for that, but that state and local economies were struggling because of a lack of compromise.
If Republicans want to be helpful, if they really want to move forward and put people back to work, what they should be thinking about is how do we help state and local governments, and how do we help the construction industry? Because the recipes that they're promoting are basically the kinds of policies that would add weakness to the economy.
Fiery partisanship in his style from the president there. And then there's a question of where, you put Meghan McCain on the political spectrum. Last year, she referred to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann as a poor man's Sarah Palin. On Fox News, the O'Reilly Factor talk show host Laura Ingraham told Bill Riley that in her eyes, Meghan McCain doesn't fit into the Republican Party.
You have a split in the Republican Party, as we just demonstrated. You have the Meghan McCain, who doesn't
Bill,
lie.
Are you serious? Oh,
I have to tell you.
Reason Meghan McCain is getting any traction, God bless her, is because of her last name. I mean, Meghan McCain, maybe she's a poor man's Ron Reagan. I mean, you called her a moderate Republican. Why is she a moderate Republican?
Well, I think she might be a liberal Republican.
Meghan McCain, they sure like to chew on you.
Yeah, I would just like to say really quickly that I hadn't met Michelle Bachmann at that time, and I have since apologized for saying that. And
Fully duly noted.
And I did an interview with her for the Daily Beast, and I'm doing an interview with her again in a week, and she's become a friend. So just for the record, I respect Michelle Bachmann, and I regret saying that.
All right. You were
for the record, I will say she's a regular man, Sarah Palin.
I regret saying that. It's one of the few things I've ever regretted saying.
But you don't have any misgivings about being kind of a gadfly from moderate land
and quite frankly,
the GOP universe these days.
But using Laura Ingraham as someone who to talk negatively about me, I mean, she's the person who launched my career by essentially calling me fat on national television. So using her as an example of someone to criticize me probably isn't the best person you could have used either.
I guess the point is that you write about a lot in your book what's going on in the Republican Party. You heard Bill O'Reilly refer to it there for a minute. But you say you don't like a lot of what's going on in the Republican Party. And you're saying you believe if this party doesn't evolve by your lights, it will die.
Yes, that is what I believe. And there's a lot of people that don't want it to evolve because that would mean that they wouldn't be as powerful. Do you have any questions for Michael?
All right, let's go this way. So here you've got a Republican, Michael. You're in the RV. You're going across the country. You want to look at what you found there. Do you sense an evolving Republican Party in your
No, if anything, there's a contracting Republican Party. There's a Republican Party that is getting ever narrower and curling in on itself and turning into a parody of itself.
So who's for whom here? Megan, maybe you're a moderate Republican. Are you voting for Mitt Romney?
Oh, yeah. I'm a proud supporter of Mitt Romney. I encourage everyone listening to vote for Mitt Romney.
Why Romney?
And I encourage everybody to disagree with Meghan McCain.
Okay. We'll come to that disagreement. Why Romney, Megan?
Oh, I mean, for so many reasons. I mean, I think looking at the polls right now, look at how well he's doing. I think I want someone who has real experience in the real workforce working in the economy. I want someone who will make realistic promises and keep them. And, you know, more than anything, I don't need a rock star, gorgeous, interesting, sexy president. I just want a president who's going to fix the economy and make things better in America. And I'm a Republican and I adhere to 75% of the things that Mitt Romney believes in.
75%? That's way
good enough for me, man.
Way a majority. Michael, how about President Obama? Is he moderate enough for you, liberal enough for you, successful enough as a president for you?
Overall, I like President Obama. I'll be voting for him again. I think he's done a lot of what he promised to do and hasn't done a lot of what he promised to do. I think he's certainly better than the alternative. Not so much because I dislike Mitt Romney. I don't. I actually think Mitt Romney will probably make a competent president. What scares me about Mitt Romney isn't so much him as the party that surrounds him and envelops him and has engorged him with their own, I don't know, problematic philosophies. I'm also concerned about the Supreme Court. So I think Mitt Romney's probably very competent. I think he'd probably be a perfectly fine president. I worry about everybody who would be around him.
So help us understand what it's like when your two perspectives, and they may not be the most polarized in the country, but they're polarized in their way. There's plenty of times in this book where you're bugging one another. When you're on that long road trip, Michael, what is it at heart, even with your favorite Republican, that was clearly bugging you about her view of the world? Help us understand where these worldviews kind of diverge.
I think where Megan and I diverge is in the two big things we really disagreed with were healthcare and foreign policy, specifically Iraq at the time. Mm-hmm. And we could not get over certain fundamental differences. And it kind of boils down to a sort of bumper sticker slogan that she screamed at me one night when she was drunk in Prescott, Arizona, when okay. We were yelling at each other about Iraq, which is freedom doesn't come free. And she said it in all sincerity, and I laughed in her face, which I regret, because it was such a kind of like, I don't know, bumper sticker slogan that to me is meaningless, but to her had a lot of sort of profundity to it. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that over the course of the next 3 weeks. Ultimately, I'm still not sure I know what it means. But there are some kind of fundamental worldview differences I found between Republicans in general and Democrats in general. And they're fundamental to people, not to party. So if you believe certain things, if you believe that the government is there to help, to support, to nourish, mm-hmm. then I think you're going to fall more on the Democratic side. If you believe that the government is there to sort of defend the nation and not much else, then you're going to sort of fall into the Republican side. And, you know, I don't know that the issues are so black and white for most people. I think there's a lot of gray area, which Megan talked about before.
What bugged you, Megan, spending all those hours on the road with your Democrat liberal passenger?
His linen pants and Crocs. He wore the same pair of linen pants and Crocs for like a week.
I was packing light. Megan had a Fred Flintstone suitcase that she was lugging around. Yeah. That suitcase alone destroyed the fuel economy on our RV.
Like Michael said, healthcare and the war in Iraq, and I guess we can say Afghanistan as well, were the big things that we didn't really find a ton of middle ground on, but we did fight, but I think we obviously have come to a mutual respect of one another and each other's opinions. And, this book and my relationship with Michael is very serendipitous in the sense that it really shouldn't have worked out as well as it did. And I know that people sort of want us to really hate each other right now and not talk to each other again. But, I mean, one of the reviews we got was, like, angry that it had a happy ending in the sense that we found common ground and we found, like, mutual understanding of one another, And I think it's a great metaphor for what's going on in politics and what's going on in America, and that if you just get over sort of yourself and your beliefs and really try and make it work, at least when it comes to a crazy comedian, a crazy girl like me, you can.
but help us understand, because, I mean, you're saying even at the end here, you know, his life is so different. His world is so different. He still has a way of getting on my last possible nerve in political terms, not linen pants terms. And you his maybe. But in political terms, help us here, because you spent this time focused on this issue and a lot of people would like to work this out. What do you think it is? At bottom, what is it about that view of the world on his liberal side that just gets under your skin?
What got under my skin was I felt judgment in the beginning, but I think that reflected more on me as a person than Michael. And I think, again, it's just the world we're used to. I'm a political pundit, even though I don't like that word, and commentator, and it's literally my job to fight about politics, and you just automatically assume the person won't be understanding, especially in the kind of world I come from. And, I mean, we just believe we have a very, very different way of looking at the world, living in the world, and where we think the future of America is headed and how we should get there as a nation. And although we do get on each other's nerves and we do fight in this book, I mean, anybody that wants to fight, it's definitely in there. But I think we made a conscious decision to get over it and try and work it out for the good of our relationship. And, you know, we used ourselves as guinea pigs in a sense. And, you know, we want to make, like, Michael and I want America. We want to come together and we want the political parties to be less partisan. And again, for the purpose of this book, I think we both kind of got over it to elect to come to a middle ground.
Can you really have it both ways? Can you really, Michael? Two different views of where the country ought to go, yet you want peace and harmony.
I think you absolutely can, because part of the problem in the discourse today is that people approach it as an either-or scenario where you go, I'm either this or I'm that. And I think the point is that we're all, hopefully as Americans, more or less striving towards the same things. We all want our families to be safe. We all want opportunity. And, you know, that's what we want. So the question is, how do you get there? And the Republicans have a different way of getting there than the Democrats have of getting there. But if the goal is the same, then there's no reason why people can't get together and talk about the goal as opposed to the path that you're trying to forge to get to the goal. Yeah. We can start from the part of common ground and work towards there.
I don't know if the goal is the same. When you listen, Megan talks about two
don't
really
disagree with
views.
Me, Tom.
I'm listening a lot to people, and I hear all kinds of goals, and I'm not sure they line up really at all. Sure, safe and opportunity, but you know, those are so basic, the paths toward those.
But I do think that we have to start with the very basic, because I do think that when you talk about politics, when you talk about political parties and government, there is a tendency to be overwhelmed. Now, I'm talking about specifically for people who aren't necessarily following politics on a daily basis, which is who this book is for. There's a tendency to be overwhelmed by the kind of the gamut of issues that come up. But if we can start with very basic questions, what do I believe government is for? What do I want from my country? If you can start there, and you'll find, I think, when listeners ask themselves that question, they'll come up with very basic answers. I want my government to keep me safe. I want the American government to provide me with opportunity, which was what I was led to believe the American dream is all about. So when you start with those basic premises, which I'm pretty sure, Tom, everybody agrees with, then
I don't
you
think
start
so
asking,
at all. What government is for seems to be at the very heart of the disagreement right now, and it seems to go right to the root of what holds
you
the parties
apart. You don't think the American dream is about
kidding?
Opportunity primarily?
We'll ask Megan if you can have it small and big. I got to say, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with Megan McCain and Michael Ian Black on Point. Megan, small government, big government, can you really have it both ways? If you want a government that's going to do a lot of things for people and help them out, can you really have that in the same pea pot as the small government that you never stopped dreaming of, Megan?
I don't think that you can have it both ways, which is why we elect different kinds of presidents. But I don't think it has to be that there is absolutely no compromise. Jeb Bush just got in a lot of trouble. Well, I mean, trouble in the obsequious sense, I guess. I mean, he got a lot of attention for saying that he didn't think that his father or Ronald Reagan could get election. President George H.W. Bush.
In this Tea Party era, he said.
Yes. Yeah. Those President George H.W. Bush and President Reagan are absolute icons of the Republican Party and in very many ways are recognized as a golden era for Republican politics. And the idea that men like that can't get elected anymore because they compromised is what is wrong with politics today. And that's all Michael and I are saying. I'm not saying that Democrats and Republicans believe in the same thing, but I'm saying we can compromise more and it doesn't have to be so black and white that if you in any way, which is why, if you're calling me a rhino, that everybody's entitled to their opinion about me because, I'm putting my opinion out there. But I don't think compromising makes me a bad Republican. I don't think disagreeing with one, like I said, I agree with 75%. 75% of what Mitt Romney stands for, probably 80 to 90% of what the Republican Party stands for. But the fact that 10% could automatically make me be told by some people that I should not be a Republican is what is wrong with politics today. And I'm sorry, but that is not what I want for Michael's children in the future. It is not the world that I grew up in. I spent my youth on my father's campaign bus as a maverick when I was 14 years old, watching him be the independent thinker that he still is today, inspiring me. And that is why I do what I do and I love what I love. And to sort of say that we're doing something wrong because we're trying to compromise in this book is what is wrong with politics in America today.
Let's bring our callers in Omaha, Nebraska. EJ is calling. EJ, you're on with Megan McCain and Michael Ian Black. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the work that that you both are doing across the nation here. And my question is for Megan. Specifically, I'm wondering how you reconcile between your comments that you said earlier about leaning towards libertarian ideology and your proud pro-life comment in that my understanding is that libertarian, wants small government, but yet, of course, there's regulation on anti-choice regulation for women and choosing what they do with their bodies. And then also how you reconcile that with your views on the Affordable Care Act.
I'm only going to take one part of this question, but starting with, I said some of my ideals sway libertarian, and I was saying that in the context of a lot of people say I must be a Democrat because I support gay marriage, and I'm just saying, when it comes to legalizing marijuana, it's much more of a libertarian view than it is Republican Party doctrine. Quite frankly, just to be honest with you, abortion and talking about abortion and talking about other people's bodies makes me very uncomfortable. It's my faith and the religion that I have complicated relationship with Christianity and with my church because I do believe in gay marriage and I don't agree with all things in my church either. But I personally believe that life begins at conception for me and my body and my life.
But it comes down to law for the people, right? Is it legal or not for a woman to make that decision?
I do not believe in repealing Roe versus Wade because I cannot – I feel very uncomfortable speaking about what – as a woman, I feel uncomfortable speaking about what other women can do. I am the daughter, a privileged daughter of a senator. I have had every opportunity and education and in every possible way have had every opportunity to make the right decisions and have had access to the right decisions in my what has been right for me. I'm not saying this very well, but I just feel uncomfortable talking about what other people should do with their bodies.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about red and blue America with Republican Megan McCain and Democrat comedian Michael Ian Black. They've driven cross-country looking for common ground, and we are asking what they've found. Subtitle of their new book, A Love Letter to Freedom. Title, America, You Sexy Bitch. Rugged title for me. I'm not sure I go with that humor, but it's Megan's and it's Michael's. And they're out there with it. Megan and Michael, responses online here. Eternalist says to both of you, thank you. The divide between red and blue and the unwillingness to have a real discussion or have any unity disgusts me and many other Americans. If nothing else, I appreciate your joint tour. And Greg says, Megan, I could do a grumpy old man shtick and lecture you on a few of the problems I have with some of your views. But the truth is, I greatly admire your courage. Thinking is good. You're an easy target. Don't get discouraged by the hate.
Aw.
Thank you. That's for you.
It's very nice, Tom.
Good. Bluffton,
We're
South
Carolina. Sorry you don't like the title, Tom.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just me. Just me. Bluffton, South Carolina. Kyle, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to say I do agree that we all have the same common goal. And if you dig deep enough, I think the core of it is the same. For some reason, we tend to look around and find other people that look at these problems the same way as we do, and then join them like we're on a team or something. And I wish that we could all be on the same team. And Megan, Michael, thank you so much for what you're doing. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I do think that the political system is set up in such a way to encourage that, to encourage people to pick a side. And the fact of the matter is, like, you know, most people, it's certainly the people that we met across the country, do not identify as either Democrat or Republican, mm-hmm. at least primarily.
Really?
And no. I mean, most people were very reluctant to say either I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat.
Well,
most people identify themselves as either independent or they might say I'm kind of libertarian. But I think the problem is that most people identify the political parties right now as basically like competing companies, you know, like one's, you know, Domino's and one is Papa John's, and they're both delivering kind of crummy pizzas. And you sort of want to
I like Papa John's.
It's kind of crummy. I'm more of a Domino's man. And you know, neither of them are providing particularly good products. But, you know, they're the only two pizzas we have at the moment, and it's unfortunate.
I was out walking the dog yesterday, and my neighbor got to talking, and he said, you know, I'm afraid to talk about politics these days because depending who it is, it just can get so heated so fast. And, you know, people's hackles can really get up in a hurry. I mean, maybe they don't tell you what party they're in, but people have got some really dug in views here these days.
And I think that's part of the problem is that people are discouraged from discussing politics for the very reason that you're talking about. I mean, you know, people don't want to get upset with each other. But yeah. I think if you go into it from a position of listening and not from a defensive crouch, of asking what people believe and why they believe it, you can learn a lot about your own views. And maybe they change and maybe they don't, but you can have the conversation. And that's what this book is about. And that's why Megan and I did what we did.
Well, I guess it's easier when you're out on the road and you're not sort of making the sausage of legislation in Washington. You get down to that and we get in trouble.
No, but most readers aren't going to be making the legislation, you know.
But they're
most
voting for somebody and they're going to vote one way these days or another.
Tom, do you not like what we're doing?
I do like what you're doing. I think that there is a kind of common desire, obviously, for this country to do well. But I'm just struck at how it comes down to particulars. People stake out positions that don't jibe with that expression of unity. They're, you know, pro-life,
but on a neighbor-to-neighbor basis, you can have that conversation, I bet, with your lovable dog-walking neighbor. And you can have the conversation and be respectful and listen to each other. And that's what the book is about. It's not for people who are going to be making the legislation. It's for people who live next door to each other to at least be able to talk to each other and have a conversation. And not even try to persuade each other of anything, but just have the conversation. Just start listening and start asking yourself questions.
Let's
hear
from
not that long ago. I mean, there was a time like within my lifetime that it wasn't this polarized. And again, I can remember that time. I mean, I literally spent my whole life in politics and I can remember that time. And it just makes me sad to think this is the way it's going to be. And it's just going to be even more polarized forever from here on out.
Let's hope not. Let's hear from John in Nashville, Tennessee. John, you're on with Megan and Michael Ian Black.
My question is, you know, I keep hearing about compromise and partisanship and all this. Why is it always the Republicans that are partisan? Why are they always the ones that need to compromise? I mean, we live in a representative republic, yet, you know, Nancy Pelosi controls the Democrats, and the media is outraged whenever the Republicans don't do what John Boehner tells them to. Do they understand how a representative republic works?
Megan, why is it always the Republicans who have to compromise?
I don't know, Michael. Why are the Republicans always the ones compromising?
I think if you ask a Democrat, they will say it's always the Democrats who compromise. It's always from your point of view and who you think is being shut out of the conversation, who you think is getting the short end of the stick. Both sides have to compromise. I mean, that's just common sense. And finally, my good friend, Senator Lindsey Graham, who we met in the book, came out the other day and said, you know what? I'm rejecting Grover Norquist and I'm rejecting this pledge that I took about never raising taxes on for any reason, because he recognizes, a good Republican that he is, that at some point you have to raise revenue in order to get our budget into shape. I do think, as a Republican, he's willing to come out and compromise, and he made a point of saying, now I just need a Democrat to do the same, and I'm sure Democrats will.
But I think, Megan, I read in the book you saying that a lot of Republicans feel that in their lifetimes, their perspective on the world hasn't had the respect it deserves from mainstream media. So you hear all pushback there. Why is that? You hear it expressed in John and Nashville saying, why are we always the ones who have to compromise?
I do think, I sort of feel awkward when I say this now because I am currently an employee of MSNBC. So I don't know if you –
Not exactly Fox News. Okay.
Not exactly Fox News. I've got a lot of respect for all networks, for what everyone does. But I do think that there is a clear liberal bias, especially when it comes to women and Republican women in the media and in politics as well. And I do think –
Well, at MSNBC, but are you saying right across the board, even these days when Fox is so big and there's plenty of – I mean, look at all the right wing on the radio. Oh, okay.
I think that's my opinion.
Yeah, and you're also wearing an aluminum foil hat as we sit here, so.
Oh, my God.
All right, we're back in the RV.
Lord.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Larry, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, gang.
Hi, what do you think?
I love the South Carolina. A couple calls from South Carolina
today. Yes, sir. What do you think, Larry?
I wanted to comment on something that Megan said earlier about voter apathy, or as I like to call it sometimes, voter atrophy, where it just is fading away. Mm-hmm. The electoral system is a significant contributor to that. I live in a state that's staunchly red, that kept sending Strom Thurmond to Washington, mm-hmm. just because they always had, where the Confederate battle flag, a lot of people still want it up there on the State House. We know right now, way before the election, where every single electoral vote in this state is going to go. It's going to go Republican, come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. Those of us who are Democrats, you can't tell someone their vote counts if all it counts for is calculating the margin of victory of the other side.
So what do you want, Larry? Do you want to tinker around with the way we vote? I mean, voting is what makes democracy work. Is it just the way?
The electoral system, mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, I understand that the electoral system was created years ago back when there were a lot of people that didn't have access to media, and they only knew regional candidates, and a George Wallace type guy who's strong in the Southeast could throw the whole balance, the whole apple cart off. In this day and age where a candidate sneezes on a little old lady in Walla Walla, Washington, and it's viral, you know, across the nation, it seems to me that the usefulness or the reason that the electoral system was created is no longer valid.
Hey, Larry, let me expand it a little bit, and I appreciate your call. I mean, there's the system. Michael, Megan, we can talk about that. I'm curious as well, you know, when you talked with Americans right across the country, there's Larry in red state land, but did you feel that frustration among people about what do I do with my vote? How do I place it so it really, you know, brings my voice into play?
In a broader sense, I do think people feel as if their vote doesn't count in the way that they would like it to. Now, whether that's a function of the electoral system or not, I don't know. I do think there's a sense from people that their vote is a very, very quiet noise in a maelstrom of sounds coming from money, huge, huge money that's flooding the system. And the result of that money is that the people with the biggest megaphone and the deepest pockets are the ones who are getting heard, and everyday citizens are not. And that translates, I think, into what your caller was just talking about, an atrophy in terms of political interest, because they feel like they're not a part of the system. They feel like they're not being heard.
So who's driving that problem, Megan? Red politicians, blue politicians, both?
As your caller said, the atrophy towards voting right
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm part of an organization called Why Tuesday that is trying to change the voting day from Tuesday to the weekend on a Saturday or Sunday, just simply because there are a lot of people that can't vote on Tuesday. They got to go to work. Then they got to pick up their kids. They got to take their kids to school. There's not a lot of time for a lot of people. I mean, registering to vote is not an extremely simple process. I mean, it's not completely difficult, but there's a lot of people that don't want to do the research, that don't want to do anything because, like you said, what's the point? And I went to college with people that don't vote. I remember after the election having a conversation with one of my best friends whose husband is an extremely successful athlete, and having the conversation that they both felt like they had no point in voting. And you can imagine how I reacted when your father was the last candidate in the last election. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't – the electoral system, I think it's imperfect, but I think changing it – I mean, I don't know if that will happen in our lifetime.
Let's bring it back to Boston. Roxbury, Massachusetts, Bill is calling. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you see?
I wanted to ask Megan one question. She keeps saying that what's wrong with the politician is the recalcitrance on both sides. Hmm. You know, I want to ask her I don't see the recalcitrance on the Democratic side. I see a president has gone to the Republicans on numerous occasions and tried. Matter of fact, that's one of the things I'm upset about Obama with, is that he spent so much time trying to court the Republicans to do something, and what do you got? All we want to do is get you out of office. We don't want to help you do anything. We don't want to cooperate with you. We don't want to work with you to try to get this country straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to stymie the situation. And mm-hmm. So I want to know why she keeps saying the politicians, not the politicians, the Republicans, are just saying, hey, no to everything.
Megan, there it is. What do you say?
I mean, I disagree with that gentleman. I think Republicans have tried on numerous occasions to compromise the president, and he hasn't. And I just – I don't – I mean – I was asked a question recently that if, you know, the economy is obviously – the jobs numbers continue to be dismal, and if there is a sense that Republicans won't pass anything because they simply don't want the president to succeed and the economy to succeed. And I didn't know how to answer that question because I sincerely hope in my heart anyone that would want to serve America and run for office would have the interest of America at heart. But I don't know if today I can say that about all Republican politicians. And you know, but that gentleman that just called in said he's mad that the president's trying to compromise. I mean, it's on both sides.
Bill, it sounds like Megan's giving you a little ground there. We're talking with Megan McCain and Michael Ian Black. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Brad in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, I was one of the soldiers that escorted Michael and Megan when they came to Fort Campbell.
Oh, my gosh. So good to see
you
from you. Good. We had so much fun. Thank you again.
Oh, it was a great trip. I enjoyed it immensely. Listen, when you guys were here, you had a different working title for the book. Now, I know you already touched on the title thing earlier, but I was curious, what happened to Stupid for America? I actually like that title.
Stupid for America as in so in love with America.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. What happened to Stupid for America?
And from my point of view, it was just that I didn't want to put the word stupid and America together. I was much more comfortable with America, you sexy bitch, than stupid for America.
Correct.
Maybe we're splitting hairs here.
Oh,
I don't
gosh.
Know.
A lot of people were reading it as America is stupid because it was three words together, and the way it was being read, it was like stupid America or something like that. A lot of people were even accidentally saying that on the road. It ended up – and then once we when we said America, you sexy bitch, we didn't think that would last either, and we just thought we would have time to come up with another title. But the publishers and the bookstores didn't have a problem with it. Some people obviously don't like it, my father being the number one person who doesn't like it.
Let me ask Brad. He was with you guys on the road. Brad, what do you think of the project here, the sort of can't-we-all-get-along project of Megan and Michael?
No, I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. It's it's exactly what we need, but I think this is a good first step, but it needs to grow. It needs to be enlarged across
and
the country.
And we agree. And that's all this is meant to be, is a first step, a first baby step even. It's just to get the conversation started. And even being at Fort Campbell was great. Just talking to soldiers, experiencing what they experience, you know, to the limited extent that we could in the day that we were there,
yeah.
Seeing what they see and hearing their point of view. you know, we tend to think of the military, for example, as this monolithic organization. And of course, it's not. It's made up of individuals who have different political points of view. And it was great spending time with soldiers to get a sense of that, to get a sense of who they are as people.
Hey, Brad.
Thank you again, yeah. Brad, for having us. This book at the end, we dedicated it to all the men and women that serve, because if you guys didn't do what you do, Michael and I, there'd be no room for us to go on the road and write about anything. And you guys are doing the real work. And we thank you for your service.
We've got a minute and a half. Megan, what would you tell Mitt Romney? He's your man in this upcoming election. What would you tell him to move toward this, let's do this together? What's the advice you'd give him to get him closer to that page? And I'll ask the same thing to you, Michael, and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But Megan, what's...
I would tell Mitt Romney that it's okay to make risky moves. I think a lot of his choices are very calculated, and Americans love people that step outside the box. That's how he's going to get independence. I don't know enough about his personal views on what could possibly be more towards the middle, but I think, you know, being adventurous and being courageous and really, really going out there and pushing boundaries. You know, President Obama coming out for gay marriage certainly did it for a lot of liberals.
So we're shocked. John McCain's son or daughter advises Mitt Romney to be more mavericky.
Exactly.
Michael Ian Black, what's your advice to President Obama for him to help to get toward this center or this common ground that he talked so eloquently about years ago?
One of the things I think I'm really missing from President Obama, and maybe from all politicians, but I look for this from my president, whoever my president is a clearly articulated mission statement about where he wants to take the country over the next 4 years. It can be anything. Point me in a direction and let me follow. I want to follow my president, whoever that president is. I want to believe in my country.
If he does that, is he going to get more Republican followers or fewer?
I don't know. But I do think what people want is honesty, accountability, and passion from their presidents.
And people hungry there for direction, I guess. And you two are still talking after a month on the road in this stinky RV.
We are.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us on today.
It's great to have you. Michael Ian Black, thanks for joining us. Come again.
Bye.
Megan McCain, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
America, You Sexy Bitch is the book, a love letter to freedom. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.